all that stuff
going as we continue to move. We have a big show ahead of us. We want to blast it out. So we're going to get into some discussion in regards to how do you move from being just a fan to a supporter, and what does that really mean? We're going to actually bring in Dr. Burchard of Southern University to talk about an article he wrote that was on the HBCU Digest that was titled Beyond Fish Plates and Tailgates, Steering HBCU Fundraisers Fundraising from Fanaticism to Support. Then Dr. William Burchard is the Special Assistant to the President for Institutional Advancement at Southern University System. So he'll be calling in a little later in the show to get that going. So get some callers jumping in, see if we can get what your thoughts are about this framework. And so I think we got a caller on the line. See if we can get you in. Hello, caller. Hello, caller. See you with the weather. See if we can get you in there. Just dropped off there. Call back in, caller. We haven't. Some lines with the weather going on. It's kind of messing with some of the equipment in the studio, but we'll keep pushing forward, and hopefully you'll call back in, and we'll get this straightened up and going here to try to move past that there. Let's see if we can get you in. Yes, I remember this going on before. So with that being said, Charles, let's jump in here. What are your thoughts, or what's some of the hot issues before we get into this article and really build up some nuances, and first of all let people know what revenue's out there? Obviously the big news of this year was the fact, when you look at the highest level, what you now call the Power Five, Oregon really shot out of nowhere and was the number one team in terms of revenues. A lot of that was attributed to Phil Knight in regards to donating a portion of the $85 million, if not all of that $85 million, to the new complex they did that shot them past Texas, which was normally hit steady for the last couple of years in regards to being a benefactor. So that's what you see at the largest level. What are your thoughts in terms of the importance of generating revenue from fundraising, particularly at the HBCU level?
Well, you take a look at it. I think when you take a look at the Power Five, there's always a benefactor somewhere in place. And you, one of the I think difficult things on the HBCU level is identifying who are those benefactors at our level, people who can contribute to a program and kind of be that quote-unquote field knight for various programs. I think one of the particular challenges that HBCUs have is trying to identify those types of donors who can really come in and really put a program on a good steady footing.
Right. With that being said, one of the things I wanted to frame is just how do you break down the revenue? Where does that revenue come from, and what are the various sources? A lot of people think revenue comes from many forces. A lot of it, they think, is game day tickets and sales like that. Right. In some cases, it is. Even at the larger institutions, when we kind of go back and forth as we discuss that, their ticket sales are often can be significant, 30% of the budget.
Sure.
Oftentimes, at the HBCU level, it's far less as 5-7%.
Right.
At HBCUs, you'll see that oftentimes that the students' fees in some of the general fund from the university actually offsets or usually accomplishes more of what the revenue is associated with. But these are some other ways that you can get ticket revenues when you're adding up the framework of college athletics. You have your tickets. Ticket sales is one component of it. Some places you have student fees, athletic fees, a lot of people call it. You can also get revenue associated with playing away games, the game guarantees.
I think that's one of the big ones that HBCUs look at in terms,
particularly when they're playing up.
Yeah.
I mean, but we also got to understand that you have game guarantees even when you're playing your SWAC conference. Oftentimes they negate them because you're just going back and forth.
Right.
But if you play a non-conference game, when you look at the contractual component of it, there'll be a game guarantee. It's usually offset from the standpoint that you're paying that same guarantee when you have them visit you. So, and then in the contract, if you break the contract, there's a fee associated with that. So those are ways that you also look at it, guarantees. Big one that we're talking about here is donations. That is a significant component of that. We also talked about that HBCUs are a large segment of that can come from the general fund. So in this case, we call that university.
Mm-hmm.
And then media rights. Media rights is a component that HBCUs have since about 1980 when you look at BET.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, BET would broadcast the game for $25,000.
Mm-hmm.
That was actually $15,000, excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
That hasn't changed much. ESPN, I think, pays around $25 per team. A couple of years ago, they changed the fee structure, and all $50 would go to the home team. So it's gone up from about $15,000 back in the 80s when BET was doing games to ESPN now, to about $50,000 that they're paying for a team. At the FCS level, HBCU is part of the contract.
Is that paid directly to the school or to the conference?
It's paid to the conference, but the conference has a line item that then sends it directly to the school.
Okay.
So even though it does go to the conference,
mm-hmm.
it's automatic at the end of the year when they do their distribution fee. I was able to get a copy of the distribution fee in regards to how the SWAC and other conferences do revenue distribution. So in that byline, what you would see is that they already dedicate $25,000, $30,000, $50,000, whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
for the media rights for a particular game. You would get that, and it would be subtracted from the revenue, and then you divide up your net based on the number of shares that you have there. So again, you're welcome to call in if you have some thoughts in regards to beyond fish plates, tailgate, steering, HBCU fundraising, fanaticism, and support. What is the difference in your mind between fundraising and support? You can follow us on Twitter, Dr. Kenyatta Cavill, DrKenyattaCavill. It's also on there in terms of tweeting, retweeting, and your thoughts, and post your thoughts on that in terms of support. The last one that is important is branding before we even move forward. So there's a source in terms of branding, and a lot of people look at that in terms of merchandising.
Mm-hmm.
Is another term you hear in terms of that.
Mm-hmm.
The highest merchandising, as I last saw, was FAMU. They were at the top. Right behind them was Southern. And at that time, a highest HBCU that was doing it in regards to fundraising or branding, if you would, on that part in terms of merchandising, was just over $100,000. Versus, I'll give you some bylines of some of these other programs that even do this. And I'm taking this particular article from 2008 because it breaks it down. So at that time in 2008, Alabama, known as the Crimson Tide, were heavily in regards to number one in terms of a total money, $123 million at that time in terms of revenue.
Wow.
Right behind them was Texas at $120. Buckeyes, Ohio State, was $115. Gators, Florida Gators, were at 106, and Tennessee Volunteers were at 100. Those were your top, if you would, five that were over 100. Some of them came right in there at 99.
Total revenue.
Michigan, yes, total revenue. All the different things we look at. Total revenue. I mean, you can go down there and you get to revenue. When you look at total revenue for HBCUs, you fluctuate from about $6 million to the high end about $11 million.
Okay.
So you have some teams that are getting more money in just one area. For example, media rights for Crimson Tide with $8.8 million,
mm-hmm.
which is almost higher than many HBCU's total revenue budget.
Exactly.
But give you some ideas and some frameworks as we go further into this discussion is the fact Crimson Tide, their byline, they make $28 million, almost $28.5 million if you would, on ticket sales.
Wow.
So in terms of if you divide that, essentially they play 7-8 home games,
sure.
They get about $28 million. So they get multi-million dollars per home game, if you would.
Mm-hmm.
But that's people buying tickets. Remember, they have a lot of framework where you buy tickets, you have to donate money first.
Right.
But that drives up that cost a lot for them. They do not have any fees associated with student fees. They don't get any money from student athletic fees. Zero money comes from the students at Alabama. Versus, for example, at Longhorns, and I heard this money goes to the women's side,
mm-hmm.
they'll take athletic fees from students at 1.8. At least this was back in 2008. With that, before I let you jump in here and question here, away games, $5.5 million,
mm-hmm.
Versus Texas with $318,000, if you would, $5,500, I should say, $318,000 for Longhorns. donations for Crimson Tide, $29.8 million, almost $30 million in terms of donations.
That's
a lot more than that.
That's staggering.
That fish fries.
Exactly.
That we're
exactly.
talking about. A lot more than doing just fish fry dinners to get to $29 million. And we're not insulting people and suggesting that HBCU should be up in the $29 million, but how do you do better? A lot of this segment that we're looking at is how do you do better than what we're doing now? How do you recreate the language in such a way that people understand the importance of doing this, how they can do it? Parts of this are important in terms of tax write-offs mm-hmm. that people can take advantage of. How do you do that? Let's finish this out just to frame this discussion. From the university, Crimson Tide, while they may not get anything directly in terms of student fees, mm-hmm. as Texas does, university does give Alabama $4.1 million.
Okay.
While Texas and even the next five, Buckeyes, Florida Gators, and Tennessee, they get $0 from the university.
Wow.
It's top five program. They get $0 from university. So it switches back and forth between students and university fees. Some of those a little different. Oddly enough, if you look at Ohio Buckeyes, which has a large sports program over the general minimum number, they do not get fees neither from students or from the university. The rest of them either get the money either from university or student fees, and it ranges from as low as $1 million in case of Tennessee, mm-hmm. when we look at the top five programs, as high as 4.1, mm-hmm. as you said, with Alabama. Now to media rights, 8.8 for Alabama, Longhorns 191, that's before they did the Longhorn Network,
which is up
to like 20-some million dollars, exactly. so that's why they have jumped, exactly. and for the last 4 or 5 years, they were killing everybody mm-hmm. in regards to what they were doing as a program. And media rights for the Buckeyes, 15.7. A lot of that is associated because the Big Ten was first to the market when they created the Big Ten Network.
Exactly.
So they got a lot of money off of that.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously they play a lot of their games on the TVs. Because you got to remember, the money that's split for the TVs, even though Ohio State may be on television more often than other teams in the Big Ten, that money from the television is actually split evenly
okay.
from the conference. And all conferences except for the Big 12, they did a shared percentage where mm-hmm. OU, Texas A&M, and Texas got a larger percentage if they were on TV more.
Sure.
And that's one reason a lot of people said Texas A&M left and Nebraska when they went to the Big Ten. Because everybody else, they split it evenly in regards to that money. So you had that with the Buckeyes for 15.7, Gators 3.9, Volunteers 6.6. And also in media rights, this was prior to the SEC getting the SEC network
right.
with ESPN.
Exactly.
So you had what you call first-tier rights, which they sold to CBS. CBS would have the first right to pick a game.
Mm-hmm.
Once they didn't pick your right, then you had what you call your secondary rights,
mm-hmm.
which would go to ESPN, and that's when you see your night games that were split with SEC on ESPN, ESPN and ESPN2. You saw those games sometimes on ESPNU.
Mm-hmm.
They would pick those games. And then you had what you call tertiary rights, your third-tier rights. At that time, your tertiary rights would go back to the institution. So that's why you see some of these media rights fluctuate as well. Some teams had better local or regional deals compared to other teams in terms of the third-tier rights. So they would get their money they get from the conference in terms of media rights, and they would get their individual tertiary rights. When, just like the Big Ten pulled all their tertiary rights back from the conference members,
mm-hmm.
So did the SEC when they created the network.
Wow.
That's why Texas Longhorns did not want to give their tertiary rights back to the conference.
Right.
They thought they could get the deal, and they got the deal that just blew everybody away. Pac-12, same way. They give the tertiary rights back to the Pac-12. ACC hasn't did that. They allow the conference members to keep the tertiary rights. So a difference mm-hmm. in turning conference. In the SWAC, if you want to know, as well as the MEAC. When they did the deal with ESPN, they gave away all the media rights.
That was a question I wanted to ask.
It was exclusive deal.
Mm-hmm.
So whoever did that, I'm not sure if they really understood why that may not be the best thing to do. Again, you can call in. No, we're getting the details. We told you this is a sports segment, so we can get hot and heavy in these numbers. Mm-hmm. Hopefully you're learning something. I know a lot of folks are listening and getting this. 713-526-1230. If you have some questions, 713-526-1230. We think we've got the line straight, so you can call in, and we'll get you in before we set up our interview that will come up shortly. So as we kind of massage these numbers and let you know, finishing out with branding rights, I told you about that. Mm-hmm. Crimson Tide was at 4.5. Longhorns were killing it with their media with their branding rights, mm-hmm. at 16.6, doing a heck of a job. Florida was up there, 10.8. Notes fluctuate a little bit how well the team doing, but they usually stay around the same number. So those are some frameworks that you really get into in regards to this. But this article really did a great job of not going necessarily into the numbers like we did here to set up this interview, but to really get into the importance. And that's why I thought, as we're doing again, our business of sports segment, mm-hmm. it just makes dollars and cents. Right. Over the summer session, we're going to look at particularly HBCUs and understanding the business. We'll have a show that goes deep into branding. That's what we're starting here. We did last week, where we got into the framing of this discussion. Exactly. At the very beginning. We'll get into some media right discussions and potentially bring some people in to talk about their framework of it. Obviously, last week we talked about the big discussion of churning of conferences and what it takes, just from a leadership component, what it would take, how it would affect those three institutions, MEAC, mm-hmm. The SWAC, and Florida A&M was discussing. Some people threw in Tennessee State. They had an open invitation. Mm-hmm. Hasn't come to fruition in terms of what they want to do. And obviously, this week again, we're going into fundraising. We'll move into some branding mechanisms. And when we talk about fundraising, we're talking about donations. We want people to understand it. Going into donations. So this particular article did a great job of putting you up in there. Hello?
Hello, hey, this is Will.
Yes, how you doing?
I'm doing just fine. How you guys doing?
Doing well. Let's get you in here. We're right in the middle of this, opening up this beautiful piece that we want to illustrate to our listeners out there, in particular our HBCU listeners all over the country and all over the world for that matter, as we're broadcasted at KCOHradio.com and KCOH TV's radio that you can see and hear as we get on here. We were talking about HBCU fundraising culture. We went and did a framing and kind of took it from a big picture standpoint in terms of college athletics. We broke it down first, looking at what are the sources of revenue in college athletics, very broad. We looked at some of the top teams, which is out of the sphere, but we wanted to show our listeners the area. So we talked about the fact that you can get revenue from tickets, students, you know, away games in terms of how your contract is set up with a team, donations from the university, from the media rights, and from branding. And there might be some other ones you can throw in there, NCAA-type money and things of that nature. But generally speaking, these are some of the mix. But the article that you brought to everybody's attention, that was done, again, I will say, beautifully, very intellectually done, is the fact that beyond fish plates and tailgates, steering HBCU fundraisers from fanaticism to support. This was in the HBCU Digest. Again, this is Dr. William Broussard we have on here, is the Special Assistant to the President for Institution Advancement of the Southern University System. You can follow him on Twitter at @JAG_me_out. Jag me out. Again, @JAG_me_out, in terms of really getting some information in terms of how to be connected with your institution more than just being a fan versus being a true supporter. So let's open this up and kind of give you a platform to first say, why was it important for you to get this out to the masses?
Well, I think particularly it's a discussion that's relevant, and I apologize for the background noise here. I'm joining you guys from Orlando, Florida, here at the World Center Marriott, the National Association Collegiate Directors of Athletics National Conference.
Thank you for joining us.
No problem. I appreciate the opportunity. You know, the discussion...
First of all, we're in Houston. It's raining, and we made sure that we would fight to get in the studio. Some of us had to take canoes here,
right?
Locking keys in the cars and stuff like this. How's the weather over there? Let's have a little fun. How's the weather for you, brother?
Absolutely wonderful and typical of Orlando. So bright, you can barely see when you walk outside. Hadn't had a drop of rain yet since I've been here. So
we're a little jealous.
Nice. Sounds nice.
We're a little jealous. So we're going to ask you that again. Don't say that anymore.
You got it.
Please.
It's a discussion that's relevant at any institution. You outline the kinds of support that are available, and you're absolutely correct. Private donations, corporate sponsorships, season ticket and gate sales, game guarantees, conference revenues, NCAA revenues, student fees, and licensing dollars. No matter if you're looking at the University of Oregon, which nearly brought in $200 million in revenue this past year, all the way down to the very bottom of Division I, where institutions may have brought in $3 or $4 million of revenue. Those are the revenue categories at each institution, period. Those are the categories. That's it. Those are your limited options.
Right.
And you start talking about wanting to provide full scholarship allotments for students, and of course the cost of scholarships are going up every year. One of those areas has to tick upward, or multiple areas have to tick upward if you want to be able to continue to provide scholarships, renovate your facilities, build new facilities, provide the kinds of support for your staff and your student-athletes so that they have competitive success, so that you're relevant in your community, you provide a great community experience for those student-athletes, and, of course, matriculate them towards graduation. It's of particular importance, this particular conversation, that distinction between a fan and a supporter at historically black colleges. I think what prompted me to write about that subject is a very, very interesting, I guess it's a paradox, where you look at the fact that year in and year out, HBCUs lead FCS in average attendance for football, and yet they are in the bottom, where I think all but two or three of the 25 Division I HBCUs are considered limited resource institutions in the bottom 15% of revenues for the NCAA.
And explain that nomenclature for those that may not be familiar with the NCAA that talked about the limited resource.
So limited resource institution is just that. When they look at the roughly 230 institutions, public institutions that report their revenues year in and year out to the NCAA, the bottom 15% of institutions in terms of revenues generated make up the LOIs. There's no coincidence that the LOIs, limited resource institutions, tend to be the institutions that are predominantly included in NCAA postseason bans.
For APR?
Yes, for APR.
Great point.
It's no coincidence that you see those institutions a lot of times implicated in infractions investigations. So when you start talking about the importance of bringing up revenue, it's not just about building the new facilities. It's about providing scholarships, providing support for student-athletes, matriculate them towards success.
So you're talking about fundamental functions of being an athletic program.
No question about it. If you're going to have 350 student-athletes at your institution competing in 15, 16, 17, 18 sports, and at some institutions there are, five or six or a dozen people who work just with the football team on their academic advising. A half dozen people working in the compliance area, making sure all the T's are crossed and the I's are dotted, as opposed to HBCUs and limited resource institutions, which may have one or two academic advisors for the entire department.
Right.
One or two compliance people for the entire department. But that's why the revenues are important. It impacts the kind of support and the quality of the support that you can provide. So what prompted me to think about that was, how are we leading in attendance but lagging in revenue?
I got to jump in there and give you, that's that research side. You notice I said Dr. Bashar.
Exactly.
All right. Well, and it's making sure you pay attention.
Right.
Go ahead.
And for anyone listening along, the USA Today does a great job every year of compiling all this data. If you search USA Today,
exactly,
Athletic Financial Report, you can look year in and year out.
Great point. I'm looking at it now. Good point.
And where institutions rank. And it's important for fans to see, when you say, well, why I'm at X University, why don't we beat so-and-so? We used to beat so-and-so. That's
right.
Why.
Yes.
Because they have
direct correlation. I've been preaching this for years.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what prompted it. And so we've got fans. We've got fanaticism. We have people who proudly wear the colors, don't miss a game. Love institutions, are on social media talking about it. They wear the colors to work. The pride is there.
So if you could paint a picture of one or two words, you kind of gave some examples there. How do you define fanaticism or fanatic in terms of support of HBCU or in sports in general?
So a fan is someone who, you know, is so invested, of course, fanatic. You know, you think about that term, you know, it's literally someone who's fanatic is someone who their entire lives ride up and down. When the team wins, they're doing great. When the team loses, they're doing poorly. Like, your whole life revolves around, you know, you think about some of these, you know, the folks up in Cleveland, man, they're going to be heartbroken tonight, if they don't pull it out up in Cleveland. Some people are going to get up tomorrow, the sun's going to come, they're going to go to work. Some people are going to drink themselves to sleep tonight if they don't win. That's a fan. that's a fan. And we have fans, and that is an important raw material to the kinds of financial support that we need at our institution. Okay. But they are not one and the same. The fan is someone who loves what you do. They want to be a part of it. They want to brag when you win. They want to commiserate with their friends when you lose. They want to be involved. They want to be on the scene. But there's an important distinction between the fan and the supporter, and it's very simple. It's financial involvement. When the fan becomes financially involved in the institution, they go from being a fan to a supporter. And so what I saw at Southern, you know, a lot of folks, you know, would lament the fact that, you know, football attendance isn't where it used to be. But I've looked back at the books from the late 90s and early 2000s, and Southern had full stadiums but empty revenues.
So what
does it ultimately matter if you've got 25,000 people at your football game, but only 10,000 of them have paid for a ticket?
Right, so it looks good, but it doesn't directly input in terms of revenues and allow you to do your bottom line in terms of expenses.
And not only that, it actually costs you money. That's something that's been extremely difficult for me to get across to folks, that when you show up at a game and you haven't paid for a ticket, you are costing the institution money. We have fixed costs. When you turn the lights on, cost. When you pay security, cost. When you pay lot attendance, ushers, cost. And so the more people who show up and you have to pay for more ushers, more attendance, more et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, your costs go up, but the revenues don't.
Yeah, those are the variable side.
Right, right. So all I'm trying to indicate there is that there's that simple little link. And what's important to me, I'm trying to think of different audiences here, how alumni will take it, how administrators will take it, how presidents will take it.
Right.
For athletic directors and institutional advancement officers, I can tell you, When you call on Monday morning complaining about your game day experience, because every phone call is important. You can always get data from it, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent. But whether or not you get to talk to the athletic director or the president or the alumni director, it should be tied to whether or not you are a financial supporter. If you're someone who came to the game because you bummed a ticket off a friend, or you snuck in while somebody wasn't looking, and then you subsequently have a complaint about the game, the first thing should be, are you a season ticket holder? Are you a donor? Are you a lifetime alumni member? What's your connection to the institution? That should dictate, in many ways, how we respond to feedback. When someone calls up and says, hey, I'm at such and such a church, such and such a community club, such and such whatever, we want the football coach to come out and speak to our group.
And so you're not saying you don't have a general concern. You're saying the level of the concern all is dictated, just like just about anything in America, in regards to what level of support, financial engagement you are with the institution in this case.
That's no different from, as you say, that's no different from any other sector that we engage in. And
absolutely.
So, you know, when someone comes in and says, hey, you know, I'm the lifetime alumni member, I'm the season ticket holder, you're an investor. We have an obligation to respond to your needs.
Mm-hmm. Our stakeholders first, that's right.
As someone who invests in the institution, as opposed to someone who is a casual observer, a fan, having a bad experience. You know, if you are a season ticket holder for, you know, the Houston Texans, or, you know, for me being from Louisiana, New Orleans Saints, and you've got a complaint, and you say you're a season ticket holder, they're going to listen to you. If you're someone who gets a ticket every once in a while from your homeboy who lives down the street, and you try to call and get Tom Benson on the phone.
Yeah, it's going to be difficult.
It's never going to happen. And so,
hey, you're a little straightforward than I was. I have Charles, my co-host, in here. He's jumping at the bits to get some questions here. So let me allow him to engage you, please.
Dr.
Absolutely.
Fascinating article, and I had a couple of questions that I did want to ask. From the university standpoint, how do you identify who is a supporter versus who is a fan? Because we all know fans, and you did a great job of pointing that out in the article, the people who pay their booster club dues annually, who pay their alumni dues. But how does the university identify who actually is a supporter of the university?
There has to be aggressive engagement with all constituents. Either someone is, first of all, a supporter, it's not like a tenured position. It's not as if once you become a supporter, you remain one. And it's the same thing about being a fan. Someone may be a fan today, could be a supporter tomorrow.
And let me do this part of it, as we don't want to tease out all of the part of your article, but there's some things that you're aligning out of here that I think are important, and I'll let you jump back in and finish that. As you talk about some of the more common claims, which are more engaged with fans, is the fact I've never missed a game, including a road game. I pay my booster club dues annually, $100 per year. I pay my university alumni dues annually, $50 per year. Those are examples, obviously. Number four, I organize fundraisers, crawfish bowls, fish fries, and raffles. And you're not saying you shouldn't do that. No, obviously, those are fun. But you go a little deeper and continue as you were answering the question for Charles.
Sure. And so along that same vein, somebody comes up and says, you know, I'm a supporter of your institution. Okay, well, tell me what kind of supporter you are. Well, I never miss a game. So that is an opportunity to have a conversation with someone about, well, hey, look, we appreciate that moral support. There is nothing like being at Southern University and going on the road to play a game.
That's right.
And taking over the stadium and having more of our fans be there than the other team. That's wonderful. It's important. It's a great part of the fan experience. However, did you know that when you go to those road games, and you know, the Jaguar Nation prides itself on that.
Yes, they do.
That support is supporting those other institutions.
Right.
Yes.
In order to financially support Southern, here's what we need from it. Gives you an opportunity to have that conversation. Now, look,
if you're going to another game, you're talking, I think you bring this in the article, is you're staying in hotels that may be supporting that other institution. Mm-hmm. You're going to restaurants and paying money to their restaurant. There may be restaurants that are supporting that other institution.
And you're buying tickets
from that institution. Exactly.
You're making a contribution to that other institution, which is one of, if you're going to a conference game, you're making financial contributions to our competitors.
Yeah.
And
to follow up on that, Dr. Broussard, my hometown, Jackson, Mississippi, they love when Jag Nation comes to Jackson.
No question about it. I mean, the tickets there are $20, you know, general admission, $25 on the day of the game. We get there, it's $30 and $35.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so absolutely everybody in the conference. You know, Texas Southern announced recently that they were moving around their schedule. They're going to make Southern the homecoming game.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. So, absolutely. Everybody loves when they come to town. But it gave me an opportunity when I was athletic director. It gives me an opportunity now as an advancement officer to say, we appreciate that support, but are you a season ticket holder?
Right.
Do you come to home games? And if they're not, then to try to put it in that perspective and say, you know, well, would you consider not making one road trip a year? Just give up one. And take the money you would have spent on that trip in hotels, gas, food, all those other things. If you got a family of four, buy four season tickets from Southern University. Give up one trip a year to Houston, to Pine Bluff, to Itabena, to wherever.
Sure.
Yeah, I'd give up that trip to Itabena.
Yeah, that's easy to give up.
I can help you with that.
But give up one.
I should say it. That was off the record. Oh, that's right.
Right. On the radio, but off the record. But yeah, so I mean, consider giving, but it gives you that opportunity because, again, the supporter who's a supporter this year needs to be re-recruited for next year, needs to be cultivated.
Mm-hmm.
And so when that person says, yes, I am a season ticket holder, it's a high five, it's a hug, it's a handshake, it's a thank you for your support, we appreciate you, now how can I help you? But if it's a person who's not a season ticket holder, not an alumni member, not a contributor, it gives you that opportunity to have that conversation.
Sure.
In pure marketing, even sports marketing, we call that escalator. You have an escalator, and you want to move people up that escalator. And in this case, I like the way you break this down, is moving them from even not being a fan or being a fan up to being a supporter, which is at the top of the escalator. Somebody contributes in multiple facets to the institution such that they can generate the revenue needed to be successful on and off the field. Go ahead, Charles, again.
And you spoke of identifying revenue sources. The question that kind of comes up a lot in terms of HBCU football especially is ESPN, media rights or television rights are what drives, these revenues. How is it that the SWAC or MEAC hasn't found a regional network that could kind of contribute, towards more of an opportunity for these conferences to get more exposure beyond just ESPNU?
I would have, the argument could have been made, 10 years ago that, the regional television companies or an ESPN or whomever, or if you, some of the black specialty television networks, your TV ones, Bounces, mm-hmm. BETs, the argument could have been made that, well, they might want one or two of your brands, but we don't want all of them.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But when I flip on television now, we have a television agreement with Cox Sports.
Yes.
Regional agreement at Southern. When I flip on Cox Sports and I see Grand Canyon University.
Exactly.
Became a Division I institution 2 years ago. I see Houston Baptist, which up until 3 years ago was Division II.
Right.
I see, and not just that, I see what I saw Loyola and Boston University women's field hockey championship. And I'm in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, watching this. And then I'm friends with Boston University.
Great point.
A women's field hockey coach. And I'm texting. I'm like, I'm watching you on TV right now. By the way, can you step it up in the second half? You're getting killed. So if they're acquiring those properties, it strikes me as odd that, given the attendance that we have, and again the fan culture,
exactly,
that we have around our sports, that we wouldn't be invested in. And, the Thursday night deal with ESPN, on the one hand, nobody wants to turn down the worldwide leader in sports.
Sure. Right.
But when you think about, the conference putting its best foot forward and institutionally, looking very strong, we have television opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
Thursday night's a tough sell.
Yeah.
When you think about the tailgating culture and all that, around our football,
right,
programs, nobody's tailgating on a Thursday morning. And so it's extremely difficult for us to put a very positive foot forward and play those Thursday night games. So, I don't know the answer to that question. I couldn't tell you what their response is to us.
Mm-hmm.
But I can tell you, I just ran into the Sports Information Director at Louisiana Tech, and the American Athletic Conference has their own television network. And when they heard they were playing Southern, they picked up that game instantly.
Precisely, yeah.
So I know there's an interest in, certainly in Southern's brand, and can't imagine there aren't several other conference members that there's a big interest in. I don't know why. I don't know why that hasn't come, and I also don't know why it hasn't come with a paycheck, because when you start looking at the institutions in the Big Five, the Power 65, and that gap, with their revenues getting wider and wider between us, well, each SEC institution got a larger paycheck from their television network last year than probably the combined bottom half of revenues of all SWAC member institutions. That gap is only going to continue to get larger when they're getting $25, $30 million checks just for their television rights.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And the largest budget in the SWAC is $15 million at Alabama State.
Wow.
Excellent point.
And you made an interesting point there. You mentioned Southern's brand, and I'm always curious about this with Southern, because your fan base is one which you're always in school colors somewhere, and I'm always fascinated by that. But what is it that Southern has done to enhance their brand or to make their brand as visible as possible?
Well, from a branding, and of course, In that world, the identity comes first, the brand comes second. And
yeah.
So I think there's a great deal of regional value in terms of identifying Southern's word marks, Southern as an institution and what it stands for, what it's popular for. When you think about the Human Jukebox, the Bayou Classic, those kinds of things. But part of the identity, competitive success across the board, grows your identity. So when when your basketball team goes into the postseason and has competitive success on national television, when your football teams play 7-8 games on television regionally and a couple of games nationally every year, that grows the identity, where more people know who you are, the affinity soon follows. If people like your brand of play, they like some of your players, they like that you're scrappy, they like that you play the underdog well, the brand comes after that. Mm-hmm. And so simple things like, you know, up until 3 years ago, Southern University did not have a corporate licensing agreement. So now we're with Collegiate Licensing Company, which handles the policing of the use of our word marks and our brand. So when you think about a lot of the bootleg apparel companies, you know, putting cartoon jaguars on T-shirts and selling them for, you know, $3.99, mm-hmm. you know, we've got people aggressively going out there, particularly on football game days, you know, going up and down Scenic Highway, going up and down Harding Boulevard and busting those folks, confiscating their materials and making sure that when people buy Southern University products,
it's high quality. Coming back to the university.
It's high quality. It uses our official word marks and logos, and royalties come back to the institution. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in the past 3 years here, we've gone from sixth in licensing revenues among HBCUs to second. We only trail FAMU.
Yeah. That's good. That's a huge jump.
Licensing revenues. It is. And it's, you know, it's something, you know, that's one of those revenue sources. So as you continue to grow that revenue source, two things happen. People wear quality product with your official university logo on there, which again, steps up that identity. You know, I'm flying in.
Pushes that brand.
And someone on the plane sitting next to me looks down at my championship ring and goes, oh, Southern, yeah, I know this about you guys. I know that about you guys. If that SU hadn't been that official logo, if it had been some block S like that Syracuse used or something like that, or if it didn't have the official color, she'd have been looking at my ring and not knowing where or who I represent.
Sure.
So that's the most important thing we've done with branding has been unified, gotten our coaches and student-athletes and the institution and our fans buying officially licensed product. And that's really growing with the branding. And then, again, the competitive success and all those things, when people see you on television, you can a clean, unified, just uniform look in terms of your word marks and logos.
We'd like to keep you on a little longer if we can. I know we've gone past the time that we would, but it's been a great conversation. So if we keep you on a little longer, we greatly appreciate it.
Sure, no problem.
That framework you're discussing, what I've done in terms of coining a term for that is looking at the sporting HBCU diaspora in regards to that in the HBCU cultural identity. So that's the whole holistic part, and I think you have that for each institution. So I really like the way that you frame that component there. As you move on there, there's some discussions in the past. What are your thoughts in terms of conference expansion? We won't name teams in particular, so you don't have to get into that. But is that something important, you think, in terms of expanding the brand as a conference?
Well, expansion, you know, a lot of times people, you know, think in terms of, man, so-and-so and them got a great football team. We need to try to get them on board. And you don't realize that conference expansion decisions are not made by fans. It's not made by athletic directors. It's made by presidents.
Right.
And so presidents have the responsibility of looking at, you know, when someone says, I go to an Ivy League school, everybody instantly knows what that means.
Yes.
The Ivy League is the competitive league that those teams play in, but it's amazing how when someone says Ivy League, you don't think about the football or the basketball, you think about the school.
Right.
And so when someone says, I've got a PhD from a Big 12 institution, or I've got my master's degree from an SEC school, we know what those things, we know what those things mean.
Yeah, there's a connotation that comes to people's mind exactly. Associated with it.
Exactly. So the presidents are responsible then for having the conversation about when I say I am attending a SWAC school, or I'm attending a MEAC school, or I play, I'm a student athlete at a SWAC school or MEAC school, what does that mean currently? What do we want to mean in 10 years? What do we want to mean 25 years from now? And if there's any discussion about expansion, it's thinking about the kinds of institutions that fit that particular institutional profile, as well as provide competitive benefits for that institution and the member institutions, expand branding and recognition opportunities. So if there are institutions in markets where your conference currently is not represented, that helps every school in your conference recruit.
More than likely want to expand if you look at it, and I agree with this, is you would maybe go to a state of Tennessee or Oklahoma, Florida, or Georgia in regards to maybe cannibalizing yourself and going to an institution that may be already in the geographic footprint of the SWAT.
Well, if you look, for example, at a peer PWI institution, the Southland Conference, I was the athletic director at Centenary College before I came to Southern University. And when I was at Northwestern State, Centenary petitioned the Southland Conference every year for membership. They were in the regional footprint,
right.
Competitive in several sports at the Division I level. And because they could not get into a regional conference, they had to leave Division I and go Division III. And one of the reasons they wouldn't add them, they were a non-football school, and the conference didn't want to add non-football schools.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
And they had some other reasons. All the other institutions were public institutions. They were private. Fast forward 5 years, the Southern Conference adds Houston Baptist, which, as you can tell, is a Baptist school.
Right. Private.
Which at the time didn't have football. They add Incarnate Word.
Right.
Out of San Antonio, a Division II private. They add Oral Roberts, private, out of Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Yes.
And so all of a sudden the folks are sitting there like, why not us? Well, because by adding those teams, you get Oklahoma, Tulsa, Oklahoma, a booming city right now for natural gas revenues.
Right. That's right.
You add the Houston media market with Houston Baptist.
Right.
San Antonio media market.
Because you had Lamar.
Great.
You had Lamar, which was in Beaumont. You had Sam Houston, which was in Huntsville, but you didn't have Houston.
Right.
Now you've got Houston with Houston Baptist. And now you add Incarnate Word out of San Antonio. So now you're expanding into major media markets.
Beautiful.
Cities with large populations.
Hmm.
And now you're recruiting Hispanic students to your schools, in addition to the recruiting you're doing out of Corpus Christi. It just brings all kinds of value to your conference by having exposure in those particular regions. So it's not just about how many fans come to football games. It's all got to fit. It's got to be good institutions that bring you good media markets that assist you in being able to recruit at institutions in those particular areas.
At the FCS level, is the Southland Conference, is their model maybe a template for what other conferences might need to look at?
Well, I think that they haven't done anything radically different from what you're seeing at the major conferences. When the SEC was expanding, when the Big Ten was expanding, again, they're not just looking at the size of football stadiums. They're looking at, you know, at that level, they're looking at the quality of the research done at your institution. They're looking at graduation rates. They're looking at institutional profiles. They're looking at the reputation of the institution.
Mm-hmm. Media market, so, that's right.
Yeah. And so if that's what they're doing at that level, that needs to be what we're doing too. So if there's going to be a consideration of expansion, it can't just be, you know, oh, that school's got a good football team, or they, you know, they have a lot of fans. All of those things have to fit.
Sure. Yes, we're Dr. Kenyatta Cavill with Inside the HBCU Sports Lab here on KCOHRadio.com, KCOH-TV. The all-new 1230 KCOH Radio, and now KCOH More Power in the message and the music, Positively Good. We're interviewing Dr. William Broussard, who is the Special Assistant to the President for Institutional Advancement of Southern University System. As we kind of come to a close and start to wrap this up, we'll give you some time to kind of close on a framework that you would like us to consider. But the last thing I thought was interesting, we looked at HBCUs as individual institutions. Obviously, you're very aware of the recent announcement of the Celebration Bowl in Atlanta, the fact that it will be kicked off December 19th on ABC. Is there part and parcel of how a conference, particularly in this case SWAC, HBCU Conference, even the MEAC, if you would, to extension, look at transitioning conference fans to some degree like you see at the SEC, where you move from just fanaticism following your institution and a conference to being a supporter at a even greater level? Can you opine on that, please?
Well, the Celebration Bowl is a great opportunity, nationally televised game, great experiential opportunity in terms of the kind of experience you want student athletes to have at the Division I level. The only bowl-style game that's going to be played between FCS institutions, in an area that has a large number of HBCU graduates, but also is within, you know, driving distance for a great number of HBCU graduates at SWAC and MEAC institutions, as well as in a hub for folks who are flying in. Just a fantastic opportunity, and one that I hope is a great branding and exposure opportunity for both conferences, for the quality of the athleticism, the quality of the competition, the quality of the fans and supporters who will attend. And it's also a generous financial package, and one that, you know, I'm not sure about, you know, how the deal is going to be hammered out with the MEAC schools, but I know in the SWAC there's going to be some revenue sharing, where, you know, the institution that represents the conference will get the bulk of the revenues, but the other institutions will also receive small portions. Okay. So, you know, it's something that really can lift each institution. And this may seem somewhat counterintuitive as someone who's an athletic director at one of those institutions, but, you know, you don't want to blow out everybody in your conference. You know, as far as I'm concerned, a perfect season is winning every game by one. You know, you want extremely good, you know, Southern and Grambling fans, you know, for all of you know, Southern don't like Grambling, we both want to be undefeated going into the Bayou Classic.
That's right.
You want competitively for as many of those teams to be very, very good as can be. You want us to compete very good outside of conference. And when we play on television, because that's how you develop your brand.
Right, and you want it to go on down to the last play on television.
Right, right.
The last
right.
yard.
It makes a good television. The
yes, it does.
Go up, and the advertising.
It makes it good for us for talk radio people.
Exactly.
Exactly. And it makes it great for the advertisers. The advertisers, you know, 2 years ago in the Bayou Classic game, we went over about 30 minutes. NBC was like, keep the party moving, man. They threw in 30 minutes of free airtime.
There it is.
Because it was such a good game and the ratings were so good. So, you know, there's a tremendous opportunity there. And my hope is that that people who are fans, people who want to see their institution represented, get you know, we have a precious opportunity to convey to those individuals, hey, here's how we can get to the top of the heap and get to that bowl. Here's how we stay there. And it's going to take financial investment. And that's not saying everybody's got to give $1 million. You know, every person can do a little bit. Every person, you know, goes to a church, is involved in a community center, has friends, has contacts with alumni, works for a company that can support the institution. If we get all of those elements involved, that's how we're going to grow our revenues. Grow our revenues, provide better scholarship support, better academic support, fewer students ineligible, coaches with coaching incentives to have success. That's how you get your institution to the top of the heap, and that's how you keep them there.
Definitely. With that, you don't have to chime in on this one way or the other, but I understand the importance of all what you said and totally agree with it. Thank you for spending the time. I would be remiss if I didn't say, in terms of SWAC expansion, I would look at Tennessee State, FAMU. I know that's cannibalizing the MEAC, which is unfair,
right,
as well as Bethune and then Clark Atlanta, because, as you said, those media markets bringing in two private schools, so one wouldn't be independent, and you have the cultural alignment there. So you can call me off the air and let me know what you think, so you don't have to get beat up by anybody right. in regards to that. But those are some right. of the things that I think are important discussions out there. Again, I love to team up with a project and get some information out. Present some things in terms of registering and thoughts like that. But with that said, I want to say thank you for joining us. And we are interviewing Dr. William Broussard, who is the Special Assistant to the President for Institution Advancement of Southern University System. Tell them how they can reach you and anything that you want to close on.
You mentioned on Twitter at @jag_me_out, jag me out on Twitter. On Facebook, you can reach me. I'm extremely responsive. I love having conversations about
the
information that I present about or talk about or write about. And I'd be remiss if I didn't say, Dr. Cavill, congratulations to you on your promotion and tenure at
Thank you. As
someone who been an assistant professor and someone who's taught for 15 years and know how much hard work goes into that. Congratulations to you.
Greatly, greatly appreciate it. It means a lot, particularly coming from a colleague that's been in the institution and putting some time to do that work. Again, I appreciate what you're doing, and we will find a way to collaborate, because I think we have a chance to get some meaningful information. Somebody that is not only on the faculty side in terms of providing lectures, but also a practitioner, and a very good one in terms of what you've done. With that, we'll let you go and make sure, again, that we can get you back on when you have some additional news to share with us or some other things that you think are important to get to the people, this show is always open to you. And with that, we'll say, as it may be difficult for my partner here at Jackson State, we'll say, go Jags.
Yeah, I'll let Dr. Camille say that one.
All right, gentlemen, appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
All right, thanks, Doc. Right. Had a colleague of mine calling in, Dr. Reynolds, Lacey Reynolds. Hopefully he was listening. If you would, you can text me. We'll try to get some information on, or you can call at 713-526-1230 quickly, as we're about out of our time and about to close up. But some other things I want to kind of close on the article to make sure people go out here and get that. It's on HBCU Digest. Jared Carter is the gentleman that runs HBCU Digest. He's doing a good job. We'll even see if we can get him on if he's interested in coming and talking about his platform from a media side, why it's important to get this information out and why he decided to partner with Dr. William Broussard in terms of giving him some space to get some other things out. Broussard has done another article that you may want to go and visit on HBCU Digest. So with that, some things he talked about, paying dues is important, but it's also important to examine what support those dues engender. A supporter gives without expectation or return, out of spirit of philanthropy, in order to grow revenues, grow the brand, and grow the institution. A fan participates for self-gratifying purposes, to brag about wins, commiserate over losses, to beam with pride over your alma mater success and benefit from its growing brand and your association with it. So again, let's have our individual HBCU supporters become fundraisers, supporters versus fanaticism. This is Dr. Kenyatta Cavill, the sports professor, a.k.a. the data doctor, with Dr. Cavill's Inside HBCU Sports Lab with Ryan McGinty, Mike Washington, Charles Bishop. We want to say thank you for listening to us. We're coming to a close. We hope you enjoyed our conversation this week with Dr. William Broussard, who is, again, the special assistant to the president for institution advancement of the Southern University System. I am Dr. Kenyatta Cavill. We want to thank you for listening to Dr. Cavill's Inside HBCU Sports Radio Show with Ryan McGinty, Mike Washington, Charles Bishop, every Tuesday, 7 to 8, right here on KCUH 1230. Y'all, new KCUH 1230, a better broadcasting company, www.kcuhradio.com. Listen and watch. Follow me, Dr. Kenyatta Cavill, on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. That's DrKenyattaCavill. Dream big and continue to do more. Move forward. We will talk to you soon. Course lecture dismissed.
KCOH Houston.
A better broadcasting company.
Five Series. BMW.